Spectrum Business knows small business owners have to do it all. Get Spectrum One for Business. Just $49.99 a month for internet, advanced Wi-Fi with security shield, and a free mobile line for a year. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Navy Federal membership is open to veterans from all branches of the military and their family members, too. Join over 1.5 million veterans that Navy Federal serves and enjoy 24/7 exceptional service and powerful products created with you and your life goals in mind. If buying a car is on that goals list, you can get a Navy Federal auto loan. And applying is easy. You can do it on their mobile app, online, or by phone. And it's so fast, you can get a decision in seconds. Plus, you can estimate your monthly payments with their online auto loan calculator before you apply.
At Navy Federal, their members are the mission, insured by NCUA, open to the armed forces, the DOD, veterans, and their families. Credit and collateral subject to approval, rates subject to change, and are based on credit worthiness. Rate available for new vehicles. Message and data rates may apply. Visit NavyFederal.org for more information.
This is the Puck Podcast with Eddie Garcia and Doug Stolhand.
From Los Angeles, I'm Eddie Garcia, along with Doug Stolhand. Thanks for joining us for another edition of the Puck Podcast, brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. It's Tuesday, November 10th, 2020. On this week's show, in the first period, we'll give you a team-by-team report on all the latest news from the past week. It includes the latest on when the NHL season may start. In the second period, we will start an ongoing review of one of the best NHL documentaries around. And in the third period, we will read your emails. All that and more coming up on this edition of the Puck Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Doug Stolhand.
Hey, hey. How goes it, Mr. Garcia?
Good, good. Let's get into the quick off-ice report, a couple of minutes about what's going on with us and our lives over the past week. I had my wedding anniversary this past weekend. I was unsure if it was 12 or 13, so I went onto Facebook, scrolled back a year, and apparently last year was 11, so I
that's how you remember, realize, huh?
Yeah, it's not a great way, but the good news is my wife also doesn't remember. So, as a matter of fact, she didn't even remember it was our anniversary.
Oh, wow.
Saturday rolled around. She got out of bed, came into the living room where I was watching football. I walked over to her, and I said, "Happy anniversary," and I gave her a big hug, and she looked at me like, "What?"
Well, which it's obviously a meaningful day to both of you.
Yeah, I get a big kick out of it, frankly, and it always gives me insurance. If she can never say, "Hey, you forgot our anniversary," I'm like, "Well, you forgot it multiple times, so yeah. Who cares?" But no, it's good times.
What? So it's 12?
Yeah.
Very good, which means you met her after we started doing the show, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. And that just tells you how long we've been doing the show, that you've been married 12 years. You guys have bought a house, moved, and have been living there for many years now. And we've been doing the show for 14. Next year will be 15 years. But mazel tov and congratulations on 12 years of blissful marriage. And,
thank you.
It's a good life, isn't it, being married? I love it, and I hope I am never single again because I did not like single life at all.
Yeah, you know, every once in a while, certainly I get caught in the rut of, taking it for granted, and then every once in a while I do remember, I'm happier than I've ever been. I'm living in a amazing house with, these two crazy dogs that we love, and I just think, what would I be doing if I didn't have all this? And it's not good.
Yeah, you'd still be in an apartment.
It would be bad. It would be bad. So, yes, very happily married and been a great 12 years.
Yep, very good. What, you think you would still be in Long Beach?
Well, I don't even know if I'd be there to begin with, because if you recall, I was living in the Valley, which I didn't enjoy, frankly. But it was close to work, and it made sense.
It was very close to work, that's for sure.
Very. And she was living in Orange County. So I moved to Long Beach because it was halfway between her and work. So that's why I lived there, although I did love living in Long Beach. I liked it a lot. But, I have no clue where I would be living right now if I was not married to my wife.
Yeah. No, it's I'm a beekeeper because of my wife. I got a mother-in-law that I love a lot and have gotten to know well over the last year and a half as a result of being married. And I've eaten better food and seen traveled the world because of Jackie. And I often refer to her as my better two thirds, you know, the old better half. She's the better two thirds. She makes me a better person. She brings out the best in me. And it is that we neither of us have kids, but I do understand that mentality because I would rather do something that makes Jackie happy than do something that makes me happy. And she's the other way. She's the opposite. She would rather do something that makes me happy. And that's why it's a good marriage, because we both care a lot about each other and our happiness and our well-being and look out for each other. And it's a good life. It's been 18 years for me, over 18 years of marriage. And I'm just as happy now as I ever have been, if not happier. So here's to another 18 years ahead of me, for sure. But good for you. Good to celebrate and remember the good times and what you guys have together, no doubt about it.
Well, as you know, one of the things that attracted me to her, and I assume
we can't say that on the air. Let's keep it classy.
I was always going classy. I don't know what you're talking about. You're the one whose mind's in the gutter. Is our love of sports, and as you know, she is a huge Los Angeles, former San Diego Chargers football fan. And so, you know, she's been a long, long, long time season ticket holder. And so because of that, she got invited to go to SoFi Stadium this week, which is the new, I don't know, multi-billion dollar stadium here in Los Angeles, home of the Rams and Chargers in football. And so she got to go down there and also to shop in their new team store. And she got to bring somebody with her. So she took me with her, and we went down there and checked it out. And it is really spectacular. I can't wait to actually see a sporting event or a concert in that venue at some point. But they're still working on it. I was talking about this to you off the air. They got it ready so that the football teams could play, meaning, you know, the locker rooms and the facility, the field, all that. But they're still actually working on, like, the restaurants and some of the other places there. It's interesting, the team store they have, which is very nice, as you would expect everything to be nice there, but it was supposed to be a restaurant. And for whatever reason, they decided to turn it into the team store. And the cash registers, I wouldn't have noticed it had they not one of the workers pointed it out to me. But there are the fixtures for drinks at various points of the counter where the cash registers are. So that was going to be the bar of the restaurant.
Oh, and so, I gotcha. You know,
yeah. So I'm like, oh, my gosh, you're right. I do notice that now. So I'm not sure why they decided to do that. But, yeah, it's still a work in progress. But it's very impressive. And, you know, it's something I think a lot of people here in Los Angeles and Southern California will enjoy taking advantage of. We've got the Olympics coming up, hopefully.
Didn't they do the same thing at the Staples Center? There was a restaurant there, and they turned it into the expanded team store?
I don't know that.
You don't remember the Fox Sports Grill at the Staples Center?
I do remember that, yeah. But it's like a museum now or something, isn't it? I don't think it's the team store. I think it's...
Oh, I thought that's where they did the expanded team store. When they redid it.
No, I don't think so. It's something else that I've never cared to go into. It's some sort of, like, it may sound weird to say I have no interest in a sports museum, but it's like a rotating thing, and I don't know. It's just something I've never taken the time to go and look into. But
they had as well there, and I think they got rid of it. I'm pretty sure they did, which I never understood because I thought it was a great use of it or idea. But they had Fox Sports West had like a set at Staples Center in that same area that would always have a backdrop of the fans coming and going because there was Laker games, Clipper games, and Kings games, and Sparks games always going on there. And I thought that was a great backdrop. I think they got rid of that too. It is weird how the original plans and what they end up with 5, 10 years down the road, what becomes practical, are different things. But yeah, I should have gotten to go to SoFi Stadium 2 months ago to go see the concert. That's been not only postponed, but moved to a soccer stadium, which, again, nothing against Bank of California Stadium or whatever it is. I'm sure it's a fine facility. It's just not SoFi Stadium. It's not the nicest stadium in North America, which is what a part of the reason I wanted to go see the concert. But it is, I'm glad you guys got to tour it. How much did you get to go out on the field? Did you get to see your seats are going to be?
We didn't get to go out on the field. It was, you could just enough to be able to kind of look inside and see the video screens and all that kind of stuff. They weren't letting people just wander around wherever they wanted to or anything like that. But
so you didn't get to go enough to where her seats are?
No, it was kind of, it's actually because of the Los Angeles International Airport, which is nearby. They couldn't build the stadium from the ground level up. They had to dig into the ground. And it's not level with the ground. So when you walk in, you're kind of in the upper deck a little bit, maybe like midway through, I guess.
Yep.
So it's got that.
I like that. I like that idea. I've always thought it would be a cool idea, and I think I've brought this up in the past, of having a subterranean stadium. There's no windows at Staples Center, right? When you go in there, you can't see outside from your seat. So my thought would be to have the smallest footprint possible, either have subterranean parking and then the stadium is on top of it, or vice versa. You have the stadium underground and then you have the parking right on top of the stadium. So when you park your car, you go over to the elevator, you go down to the elevator, and when you get out, you're in the facility, and it's easy as pie, and it's a smaller footprint geographically. And you could call it the pit.
I would assume one of the reasons they don't want to do that is, well, first of all, I guess they wouldn't be able to do like naming rights for the stadium.
Yeah.
They also want to have it as kind of a landmark of the area downtown.
Like I said, you could reverse it, make the parking subterranean. Yeah. The parking garage is down below and then on underneath the stadium. Because I'm just thinking, parking is always an issue at every new stadium. You can never have enough parking. And if you can just build down, let's go down, you know, 8 levels of parking as wide as the stadium footprint is, you would probably have enough.
Anything you wanted to share from the past week? Anything going on with you?
Not that I can think of. Last 7 days. Nope. Nothing worth mentioning on here. So let's move on. We are going in alphabetical order. We're starting with my Anaheim Ducks, who do have news this week.
The Ducks do have news this week, but I did want to start with kind of the latest on where we are as far as the start of the next NHL season. We did find out this week, for what it's worth, the NBA has a definite start date, which is December 22nd. So they have agreed. I know the players did not want to start in December. They wanted to start in January or February.
Yeah, but the league said, do you know how much money we get for those Christmas Day games?
That's exactly right. And when the players found out how much money everyone was going to lose, they decided, you know what, let's go ahead and start Christmas Day. So, but we don't yet know about the NHL. But Gary Bettman, earlier today, as we record this on Tuesday, did do an interview and gave some quotes. So let's start with that before we get into the team news.
And, fair enough.
Commissioner Bettman says, and again, there's not a lot of breaking news here necessarily, but this is the latest we know. And he says the league is exploring short-term hubs, temporary realignment, and a reduced schedule as options for the 2020-21 season. He said that he would never ask the players to return to a bubble for an entire season, which is a good thing because they would never agree to that, so might as well not even ask. Yeah. But of course, that's what we had for the postseason this year, as you all know. He said that the league is exploring teams playing in their own arenas with or without fans, depending on the local situation, which of course is different in different states. He says either in hubs or in a hybrid system. He says any plan would be a collaborative effort between the league and the Players Association, of course, as was the case with the bubbles in Edmonton and Toronto. He said both sides are in constant and regular communication, although there hasn't been a regular formal meeting yet. He said if teams play in hubs, that they would rotate in and out. He said, quote, you'll play for 10 to 12 days. And he said, you'll play a bunch of games without traveling. Then you'll go back home for a week and be with your family. He says, we have testing protocols and all the other things you need. It's not going to be quite as effective as a bubble, but we think we can, if we go this route, minimize the risk to the extent practical and sensible. And so that's one of the things we are talking about, end quote. Bettman has said the NHL is still targeting January 1st as a start date, but added how the season starts is not necessarily how it will finish, depending on how the situation evolves. The NHL and the NHLPA, of course, have to consider the U.S.-Canada border situation. Bettman said on that, quote, obviously, we're not going to move all seven Canadian franchises south of the 49th parallel, so we have to look at alternative ways to play. And while crossing the U.S.-Canadian border is an issue, we're also seeing within the United States limitations in terms of quarantining when you go from certain states to other states. It's, again, part of having to be flexible as it relates to the travel issue, which is obviously a great unknown. We may have to temporarily realign to deal with geography, and that may make sense because we have some of our teams travel from Florida to California, and that may not make sense. It may be that we're better off, particularly if we're playing a reduced schedule, which we're contemplating, keeping it geographically centric, more divisional based, and realigning again on a temporary basis to deal with travel issues, end quote. So that was Gary Bettman. I'm trying to remember. He said this during a virtual panel discussion at the 2020 Pali International Council Summit. I have no idea what that is, but those were the comments he made earlier today about when we may see the start of next season. So he says they're still targeting January 1st. Doug, I know you're probably on top of this a little bit more than I am. I know there's encouraging talks about a vaccine, maybe sooner rather than later. That's obviously a game changer in all of this.
Yes.
So to keep that in mind. But apparently the NHL is still wanting to start on January 1st. So we'll see if that happens or not. And of course, we had the comments from the owner of the Vegas Golden Knights, where he was seemed to be indicating more of a February start. And again, this is a balancing act between the NHL wanting fans in the stands as much as possible because they have to have that revenue, while also figuring out, you know, they want the season over before the Summer Olympics start. So there's definitely, you know, trying to wedge this in a certain time frame.
Well, the vaccine announcement is still very early. The good news is that they have one. The Pfizer Corporation announced yesterday that they have a vaccine that is tested 90% effective in people that do not already have it in preventing them from contracting it, the COVID-19. So that's the good news. The bad news is there's still a long way to go in making that open to peer review and making sure the efficacy of the vaccine is as legitimate as they claim. There's still processes to go. It's not going to be ready tomorrow, obviously. Second problem would be then the mass production. We're not talking about something that a few people might be interested in. This would have to be for the world. Billions of applications of this vaccine would be requested, and everybody would want it first. So you'd have to prioritize who's going to get it, where, and how. But the fact that we are close is a very good sign, obviously, as that would be. That's what everybody wants, is a way to either prevent this or to cure it, to treat it. So that's good news. I still think it's best, and Gary Bettman said it, the way the season starts is not necessarily the way the season will end. I don't think he means that in regards to the travel, because I think you're going to have to come up with the all-Canadian division, and there are seven teams in Canada, and then have three eight-team divisions in America. I think that's going to be a must. What I like is the idea of having, to me, one bubble, as it were, or hub per division. And the idea of going there, playing a few games, as they said, playing for 10 to 12 days, playing a bunch of games, and then going home is viable if you're only going to three different facilities. Now, we've seen, as we always talk about, because you and I are football fans here in North America, we've seen the NFL play games in their home arena all season long. And yes, they've had players test positive for COVID. College football is doing the same thing. And those players or coaches or staff are quarantined once they test positive until they meet the requirements of testing negative and are symptom free for a certain number of days. And then they are allowed back into the league. So that can work in hockey. The testing has to be there. The protocols have to be there. But the NFL, college football, and it appears the NBA will be leading the way in this for the NHL. The NHL was one of the early teams to set the standard during the pandemic. In the late ends of this pandemic, at least at the late end of the year, they will be one of the last teams. Baseball did it for their entire season. And as I said, the NFL, college football, and now the NBA are all going to do it before the NHL gets back. So the examples are going to be there. It is viable. It's just a matter of when they decide to do it, how they decide to do it. And the players that, one thing they're going to have to keep in mind is training camp. The players that are currently playing in Europe, in the KHL that they have lent and that are signed over there, are going to need to quarantine when they come back to North America, whether it's Canada or the U.S., for a certain amount of time before they're allowed to get back out on the ice and play. So they're going to have to work in that time schedule as well. But it's looking optimistic. It looks like we will have a season. I don't think it'll be early January. I think it's unrealistic that we will see hockey in less than 2 months from today. But I'm hopeful that by February 1st, we will have hockey back on the ice.
All right, so that's the latest as that goes, and I'm sure we'll be updating that story on a week-by-week basis as we get more and more information. Let's go back to checking in on all the teams in the NHL and find out what news was made this week for each specific team. There, unfortunately, are some teams that really didn't have any news, but as we go in alphabetical order this week and start from the A's to the Z's, we do start with Doug's Anaheim Ducks, who signed both of their number one draft picks from this year's draft this past week. That includes the sixth overall pick, Jamie Drysdale. He gets a three-year entry-level contract. He was the second defenseman chosen in the draft last month. He's 18 years old, was a first-team All-Star in the Ontario Hockey League last year for the Erie Otters, where he had 47 points in 49 games. Drysdale has been invited to Team Canada's camp later this month for the 2021 World Junior Championship. He was a member of Canada's gold medal-winning World Junior Championship team earlier this year. And the Anaheim Ducks also signed Jacob Perrault to a three-year entry-level contract. He was their first overall pick, their second first pick, 27th overall. This was in the 2020 NHL draft. Oh, wait, that is this year. What am I talking about? No, not this year.
No, I'm just shaking my head at how you got confused that 2020. Yeah, yes, these guys were drafted a month ago.
Yeah, it's not hard to confuse me, Doug. You should know that by now.
Yeah.
Jacob Perreault is also 18 years old. He had 39 goals, 70 points in 57 games in the OHL for the Sarnia Sting this past season. He was named to the OHL's first all-rookie team a couple of years ago.
And honestly, neither one of these guys are going to be playing in the NHL this coming season. But what this does for Ducks fans is it relieves the pressure and the anxiety of wondering if they're going to get signed down the road. They are signed. They are under contract for their first 3 years as professionals, whenever that starts. So if it's this summer or this season, great. If it's next season, great. If it's 2 years from now, if they complete their time in juniors or college or whatever, and then come into the NHL, the Ducks have them already under contract. There's no worry about that, and they are ready to go.
No news involving the Arizona Coyotes this week, but I'm not trying to be a jerk here. Let's be honest. That's actually a good thing, I think, for the Coyotes, because all the news involving that team has been bad of late. So I think the Coyotes fans are just as well to not hear any news involving the Coyotes this week.
Are we entering, Ed, you remember the 96 year when every team came out with those third jerseys? And
yeah,
the overwhelming majority of them were hideous. And there were a few, like the New York Rangers, that were great.
You're talking about the Wild Wing, the King's Burger King, the Blues Trumpets.
Blues Trumpets that head coach Mike Keenan refused to let the team take the ice in. Are we entering a second golden era of just anything goes jerseys? Because some of these jerseys that have come out, the Ducks looks like they got some sort of retro vibe now going. the Coyotes are going back to the, what do they call that? The Kachina jerseys.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're going back to that look, which I like. I mean, it is what it is, but it's, there's no doubt. I like it because it's ugly. The same reason I like the Wyoming Cowboys uniforms. It seems like that Dallas Stars one that looks like it should be under a black light. Are we entering a golden age of collectible ugly jerseys?
Well, maybe they're making up for lost time, because remember that the first year they switched over to Adidas, they had no third jerseys.
Yeah, they were not allowed to. Adidas needed to sell the primary jerseys, right?
Right.
So they said no thirds, and now everybody's got a third, and some of them, I got to say, they are not, they're not great. You know, I'm no fashion plate, but I look at them and I'm like, oh boy, these are rough.
I did notice, because, you know, I'm trying to look for news for the show this week, and so I go on all of the team's Twitter accounts and just scroll through to see if there's anything that I've missed, or even anything amusing. It doesn't have to be, you know, some signing or whatever. And I did see every team this week had that, what was it,
reverse retro.
Yeah, so I don't know if that's actually going to be some kind of a game jersey, or if that's just for fans. Maybe one side is the current jersey and you turn it inside out and it's the old school jersey that Reebok is coming out with.
That'd be a twofer, huh?
Yeah, so that's actually kind of cool to, you know, you're getting two jerseys for the price of one. They've been pretty vague about it. I'm sure they're going to announce more as it goes along, but if you look on it, you can click on any NHL team and you will see hashtag retro, hashtag reversible, or something like that.
Reverse retro, reverse retro. I thought it was a reversal of the colors. Like, okay, if you had a black and white jersey, then what they did, my understanding was, they put the black where the white was and the white where the black was. And so it's like a photo negative of your jersey. So in the Ducks case, it would be the old teal and eggplant and jade, and they would reverse the two colors. That was my understanding of it. There's some crazy looks, though, to these jerseys.
I did notice the Carolina Hurricanes had a Hartford Whaler color to them. So,
oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
That's nice. I like that.
We'll keep an eye out for that next week.
I'm looking at the article right here. NHL teases release of reverse retro jersey line for every team. Let's see. Presumably with that in mind, just in time for the holidays, the league and its official uniform partner Adidas, depending on where you are in the world, has teased its line of reverse retro jerseys, which is set for release on November 16th, less than a week away, and to be used throughout the 2020-2021 season. It appears as though all 31 teams, and why wouldn't the Vegas Golden Knights have a retro jersey? They've been around for 3 years. All 31 teams will have their retro looks reimagined by reversing either old color schemes or ones that belong to a previous iteration of the same franchise. Based on the animation alone, it's quite difficult to nail down a single team, let alone 31. Thankfully, there's a cheat sheet, which may or may not be accurate. So they compiled the tweets from all 30 teams. The Kings is the purple and gold from the 80s. The Penguins looks like it's just white and gold from back in the day. Dallas, just green and white. San Jose, teal and white. Nothing fancy there. Toronto, blue and white, as you would expect. Vancouver's got the green and the blue, so we'll see what that can be. But it'll be interesting to see. So next week we will have more information for sure, because these will be announced on the 16th, and that is before next week's show. But anyway, when you mentioned the news, I thought, it's nice to have new jerseys. You and I are both jersey hounds, and we'll buy jersey. I got a lot of different jerseys for teams that I don't even like, just because I like the look. And this is a whole new look, but it really feels like we're entering an era where they're just kind of throwing stuff against the wall, and they're doing it for all 31 teams, and there's going to be about a handful that look really good, and there's going to be some that look really bad, and there's going to be a lot that are just okay. But it is interesting, and it's going to make watching games a little more unique this year than it was in the past couple of years.
So we'll keep an eye out for that for next week's show. Yep. No news involving the Boston Bruins. We move ahead to the Buffalo Sabres, who signed veteran goaltender Dustin Tokarski to a 2-year contract worth $1.45 million with an average annual value of $725,000. Tokarski is 31. He had a .924 save percentage in 18 games last season in the AHL for the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins, the Penguins affiliate. He's a two-time Calder Cup champion. He appeared in, or has appeared in, 34 career NHL games with the Lightning, Canadian, and Ducks. He has a 10-12-5 career NHL record, a 904 save percentage, and a 2.84 goals against average. He last appeared in an NHL game with Anaheim in the 2016-17 season.
I remember him. You know why I remember him a lot is because his jersey and his gear was always on sale at the used merchandise. And I thought, Tokarski. And it's this, you know, the jerseys for goalies, because they have them over the padding. It's massive. I mean, you could fit two people in those jerseys comfortably. So I always look at that and I think, I'm all right. I'm all right with what I have.
No news involving the Calgary Flames, Carolina Hurricanes, Chicago Blackhawks, or Colorado Avalanche. We jump ahead to the Columbus Blue Jackets, who signed defenseman Vladislav Gavrikov to a three-year, $8.4 million contract with an average annual value of $2.8 million. The deal locks up the 24-year-old, who was among the NHL's top rookie defensemen in goals, assists, and points last season. Gavrikov, who was a restricted free agent, is seen as an important piece in the team's defensive rotation, skating behind star blue liners Seth Jones and Zach Werenski. Gavrikov had 5 goals and 13 assists in 69 games this past season with Columbus. He added a pair of assists and a goal in 10 playoff games. Before making his NHL debut in the 2019 playoffs for Columbus, he played in Europe's KHL, where he logged 16 goals and 33 assists in 222 games. He was selected by the Blue Jackets in the sixth round of the 2015 draft and has represented Russia in multiple international competitions. So again, Vladislav Gavrikov, which is a fun name to say, 3 years, $8.4 million with the Blue Jackets.
And that's a very nice deal for them, because they get a guy that is in his prime. As you said, last year was his rookie season, but that is only because he was playing in the KHL for many years. He's 24 years old, and he will turn 25 later this month. So they're getting a guy in his mid-20s who has played in professional leagues for numerous years. He was in the KHL as long back as 2015 when he was playing for Lokomotiv Yaroslavl. So he's got plenty of professional experience, plenty of international experience in both the World Championships and all different types of international events. So he's ready to go. And I think as a depth player, you mentioned the guys that they already have on their team at the top end. You got Seth Jones. You've got Zach Werenski. You even got David Savard still for another year. Gavrikov had a decent year last year as a rookie. Getting him for less than $3 million for the next 3 years gives them great depth and a guy that is going to be a nice middle pairing defenseman, and that's a very nice price for the next 3 years.
Blue Jackets also announced that forward Gustav Nyquist is recovering from surgery to repair a torn labrum in his left shoulder.
Can I guess, was the surgery successful?
I hope so.
As we've said, I have yet to hear them say unsuccessful surgery.
Well, I hope we don't hear that, frankly, but he's expected to miss 5 to 6 months, according to GM Jarmo Kekalainen, who said, quote, "This was a chronic issue that Gus has been dealing with for a number of seasons. He has been able to perform at a high level, but a cyst in the area developed over time that has inhibited his ability to continue to do so. As a result, surgery was the best course of action, and we look forward to having him back at full strength this season," he says.
That's not realistic.
Yeah, Nyquist is 31, signed a four-year deal with the Blue Jackets in 2019. In his first season with the team last year, he had 15 goals and 27 assists, playing in 70 regular season games, again, during this past year.
I mean, he's a little overpaid for what he's providing them, and they got what they should have gotten out of him. If you combine what he did 2 years ago, he had 22 goals and 60 points, but that was between the Red Wings and the Sharks. Go back a little bit, he's got 21 goals, but he's at this point in his career, he's a 15 to 20 goal guy with around 40 to 50 points, and that's what he gave you last year, 15 goals, 42 points. That it was a shortened season, so you add in a few here and there. But you said 5 to 6 months is his recovery time?
Yeah.
I mean, if you start in February and he already had the surgery, then you're basically taking 2, maybe even 3 months out of that time. He could be back for the second half of this coming season. That's true.
Dallas Stars signed restricted free agent forward Roope Hintz to a three-year, $9.45 million contract. Hintz had 19 goals and 14 assists in 60 games this past season. including 5 game-winning goals. He also had 2 goals and 11 assists in 25 playoff games, of course, making it to the Stanley Cup final, but he did not play in the last 2 games due to injury. He was already playing with a fractured ankle when he was tripped into the boards during Game 4 against Tampa Bay and suffered a hip injury. Didn't play in the final 2 games, as I mentioned, which the Stars lost. He played in 118 regular season games and 38 playoff games for Dallas over the past 2 seasons. He turns 24 next month, 28 goals, 27 assists, and 118 regular season games, all for Dallas, who selected him in the second round of the 2015 draft with the 49th overall pick.
It's a good contract for him because he's a guy that is emerging. They get him at a nice time in his career. As you said, he's entering his mid-20s, so he's going to be entering his prime. He's also a guy that has played in professional leagues for a while now, going back to Liga in Finland for many years now. But he is he had 19 goals last year in just 60 games. So if you give him another 22 games, a full season, this is a guy that can get you 20 to 25 goals a season and around 40 to 50 points. And that's a very nice complimentary piece for $3.15 million a year, which is about what he's going to be averaging out to. That's a nice deal for Dallas. And I saw their tweet, hip hip Rupe is back with the Dallas Stars.
Let's move on to the Detroit Red Wings. We did have an interview by the Detroit Free Press with Red Wings GM Steve Yzerman, so we thought we'd share what he had to say, and he told the Detroit Free Press that he was very optimistic the NHL would be able to have a season. He said, even if it doesn't follow the traditional layout, he said, quote, I'm optimistic we will come up with something that works, and we're just kind of waiting for any guidance from the league as to what the plan will be. Red Wings haven't played since the season was paused in March, but Yzerman said the longer the break goes, the less of a disadvantage it will be for the 7 teams who did not take part in the return to play. In the end, he believes it'll come down to the individual players to be ready for play, saying, quote, the guys who were conscientious and took care of themselves, they didn't miss a beat. I'm hopeful that our guys are all conscientious and motivated and self-disciplined. I believe they are, end quote. The Edmonton Oilers signed defenseman William Legesson.
His middle name is
Why, you know, you don't have to read these names.
I can read what you
Legesson,
got.
William Legesson. 2-year, two-way contract worth $725,000 at the NHL level.
He's Swedish, so I'm guessing it's more Lagesson.
Okay, Lagesson. I've heard it both ways. Will play professionally in Finland until the start of the NHL season. He's 24 years old. Did play in 8 games with the Oilers this past season, including making his NHL debut on December 31st of 2019 against the Rangers. Also appeared in 25 games in the AHL with the Bakersfield Condors, where he had 3 goals and 7 assists. In 92 career AHL games, he has 11 goals and 26 assists.
He actually played in college here in America.
Was UMass. That right?
Yeah, he's a UMass alum. So he's been over here in North America for a long time. So if you're wondering about his conversion to the North American game, should be seamless. He's, as you said, he's played in the KHL for 2 years now. And or the AHL, I should say, for the 2 years, and NCAA before that. He's got NHL experience, so look for him on the depth, making a run at a depth defensive spot for the Edmonton Oilers this coming season.
Florida Panthers signed defenseman Mackenzie Weegar to a 3-year contract worth $9.75 million with an average annual value of $3.25 million. The restricted free agent was scheduled for arbitration on Sunday and was the final player to file for arbitration to settle. He's 26, had 7 goals and 18 points in 45 games with the Panthers last season, adding 1 assist in 4 return-to-play games. Seventh-round pick of the Panthers in 2013. He has 13 goals and 41 points in 172 career games with the Panthers. Panthers also have hired Ulf Samuelsson as an assistant coach. Samuelsson was most recently head coach of Leksand IF in the Swedish Hockey League. He also spent time as a scout for the Seattle Kraken. Must have been a very brief stint for the Kraken.
Yeah.
But over a 15-year coaching career, Samuelsson has served as an assistant with the Phoenix Coyotes, New York Rangers, Chicago Blackhawks. He was also head coach of Modo in Sweden and the Charlotte Checkers in the AHL. During his 16 seasons playing in the NHL, he played in over 1,000 NHL games and won 2 consecutive Stanley Cups with the Penguins in 91 and 92. No news involving the LA Kings this week. We move ahead to the Minnesota Wild, who announced that they have extended their ECHL affiliation agreement with the Allen Americans for the 2020-21 season. The Americans, located in Allen, Texas, just north of Dallas, will serve as a resource for the development efforts and personal needs of both the Minnesota Wild and their AHL team, the Iowa Wild. The agreement allows the Wild prospects to be assigned to the Americans for developmental purposes throughout the season. The Allen Americans were founded prior to the 2009-10 season. The club begins its 12th season of professional hockey on December the 12th. Montreal Canadiens had a couple of minor notes to pass along. I did see, and we'll talk about more of this a little bit, and I did notice when I was scrolling through all of the team's Twitter feeds that they are going on, at least on social media, going very heavy on the Hockey Fights Cancer message, which you talked about last week with the power play. But I did, you and I have talked about, is it called Cameo? Is that what the app is called?
Yes.
Cameo? Where there are different levels of celebrities on this app called Cameo that for a fee will send you or a loved one or whomever you want a personalized birthday message, happy graduation, whatever right. You want them to do. So I guess that, I don't know if the Canadians use that as a model, but they, Montreal Canadiens players are available to send personalized messages to fans if you donate to their Hockey Fights Cancer Fund. I didn't see the details on how much you have to donate or if you can pick a specific player or you just get assigned a player. But along the vein of that Cameo app, the Montreal Canadiens players are doing that for their Hockey Fights Cancer.
I would suggest instead of that, and this is just me throwing it out there since you brought it up, what I thought they were going to do is they will send messages to people that are fighting cancer, messages of encouragement. If you've got a hockey fan, certainly a Montreal Canadiens fan that is dealing with cancer, how great would it be to get a message from an active player, Carey Price or anyone on the Canadiens saying, you know, or their alumni saying, you know, we're with you. You know, this is Shea Weber and I heard you're going through some tough times. We want to wish you all the best and that kind of stuff. It would take minutes of their time, but would mean a lot to the people that got them. But I guess you could ask for that through Cameo as well, right?
Yeah, sure. I also saw a story on their website that you might want to check out, Doug. The Canadians have partnered with local urban beekeeping company Alvili to host a pair of beehives atop the Bell Center, which is the home of the Canadians. It says that two hives were installed this past June with approximately 50 to 60,000 bees.
Wow.
So on the roof of the Bell Center, they've got a couple of beehives up there. How many bees do you have in your hive? Do you know approximate number of how many bees?
The last time I did a count, it
was... Do you really count them? Or are you being serious?
Oh, God, no. No. It's impossible to count them. One, they all look alike. And two, they don't stand still.
Oh, you know? Crap. Let me start over. One, yeah,
line
two.
Up. Did I count that one already? Which, hey, look, come on, lady. What are you trying to pull here? She laughs and flies away, gets back in line. No, a typical hive would have, like ours would have, between 5 and 15,000 bees. So they probably have two, you know, average hives, not huge, but good sized. And that's good to hear. I mean, it's I'm looking at the article now and I see the hives that they have. They're very similar to ours and the size and stuff like that. But that's great. I wonder, in such an urban area, I know that the bees they can fly up to 2 miles to get food, water, whatever they need to do. Such an urban area, I wonder how far they have to go for the nearest garden or source of water, whereas ours is they're in a garden and they have a fountain right there for them to drink. But yeah, that's great news. And their honey, if they could cover that roof in beehives, they could sell Montreal Canadiens honey and the fans would buy that up lickety split.
I'm sure that anytime you got a chance to make some money, folks are like, oh really, come in and sit down, let's talk about this.
Go on.
Nashville Predators signed forward Luke Evangelista to a 3-year entry-level contract. The 18-year-old was Nashville's second choice in this year's draft, Right winger, played in 62 games in the OHL for the London Knights. He had 23 goals and 38 assists. Evangelista is expected to skate again for London this coming season. And he is the second cousin of two-time Stanley Cup champ and Hall of Famer Brendan Shanahan. No news involving the New Jersey Devils. We skip ahead to the New York Islanders, where they have signed restricted free agent Ryan Pulock, reaching agreement on a two-year, $10 million contract ahead of his arbitration hearing. The 26-year-old defenseman had 10 goals and 35 points last season, skating on the top pairing for the Islanders. He has 35 or more points in each of the past three seasons. He was a first-round pick, 15th overall of the Islanders back in 2013.
We talk about this every year, and I can't emphasize it enough. It's not something to just blow over. It is always great news when your team avoids arbitration with a player like that. That is a player they want to have be a part of their organization for years to come. And the arbitration process is such a toxic experience for the players, because if you're not familiar with what it is, remember, basically the player and his agent are going to go in to the office of an arbitrator. In this case, they would be doing it virtually over Zoom, I'm sure, or whatever. And they're going to present their case of why they deserve X amount of dollars. The team is then, in front of the player, going to argue why that player does not deserve that money and actually deserves much less. And it is just, it's detrimental to your relationship with that team to hear the GM, potentially the owner, potentially the head coach, talk about why you suck and why you don't deserve the money that you want. So if you can avoid that, it is worth it. And to me as a player and me as a GM, I would rather pay a little bit more than I wanted to, or take a little bit less than I wanted to, depending on which side of the equation I'm on, to avoid the arbitration process. So this is good news for the Islanders and Ryan Pulock.
A couple of signings for the New York Rangers. They avoided arbitration with center Ryan Strome, agreeing on a two-year, $9 million deal. Strome had a breakout season this past year with 18 goals and a career-high 59 assists while centering the Rangers' second line. The 27-year-old has 95 goals and 159 assists in 491 career NHL games for the Islanders, Oilers, and Rangers.
It's a good deal for him. I mean, I know he had 59 points. He's got back-to-back 18-goal years for them. Remember, this is a guy that was bouncing around a little bit. He had a good year for the Islanders back when he was a rookie, 2014-15 season. He had 50 points and 17 goals. Really dropped off from then. Didn't work out with the Oilers. Came to New York and immediately, I mean, the year he 2 years ago, he was on the Oilers. He played in 18 games. He had 2 points. He gets traded to the Rangers. He has 18 goals and 33 points the rest of the season in 63 games. And then last year, he follows it up with 18 goals and 59 points in 70 games. So it's a bit of a, it's a little bit much for what I would have wanted to pay him, but he's earned it. He played very well for the Rangers, and it was important for them to get him signed, because he's probably in a full season, full 82 game season, he's probably a 20 goal, 50 point guy year in, year out.
The Rangers also avoided arbitration with Brendan Lemieux. He gets a two-year deal worth $3.1 million, average annual value of $1.55 million. Lemieux is 24 years old. He had 6 goals and 18 points in 59 games for the Rangers last year. He has 19 goals and 36 points in 131 career NHL games.
They are selling the honey, Ed.
Are they really?
It is $11.50 for a jar that is less than 5 ounces. That's an exorbitantly high price.
I can tell
you right, as a beekeeper, that's a very high price. You're paying for the Canadiens brand at that point.
The sticker on the jar with the logo.
Yeah,
on it.
That's exactly right. That's a high price.
The Ottawa Senators signed defenseman Christian Yaros to a one-year, two-way contract. He'll make $750,000 in the NHL, $250,000 in the AHL. He's 24 years old. He had 3 assists in 13 games with Ottawa this past season, as well as 2 goals and 13 assists in 34 games with the Binghamton Senators. He was a fifth-round pick of the 2015 NHL draft. He's got 1 goal and 12 assists in 76 NHL games, all with the Senators.
I mean, he's a depth defenseman at this point for him, even on that team. They've got Thomas Chabot. They've got Nikita Gaitsev, Eric Branson, Mike Riley. He can probably fight for a spot on that third pairing with Christian Wolinen and Joshua Brown. But maybe the potential the young guys are fighting in there as well. But it's good for him to get in there and at least give himself a chance going into camp. It's done, but he's got a fight on his hand to get ice time.
No news for the Philadelphia Flyers, Pittsburgh Penguins, San Jose Sharks, Seattle Kraken, St. Louis Blues, or Tampa Bay Lightning. We skip ahead to the Toronto Maple Leafs. And sad news for the Leafs as one of their legendary players has passed away. Howie Meeker, who went from being a Stanley Cup winner to a Canadian hockey icon on television, has passed away at the age of 97. Commissioner Gary Bettman released a statement on Meeker's passing saying, quote, Howie Meeker spent a long and remarkable life playing, teaching, and broadcasting the game of hockey and serving his country with incredible enthusiasm. And, quote, different generations had different memories of Meeker, but they all involved hockey. He played it, talked about it, and taught it. Maple Leafs said that Meeker had been their oldest living alumnus before passing away. As a player, he won the Calder Trophy as Rookie of the Year in 1947, went on to play on 3 All-Star teams, and he won 4 Stanley Cups in 8 seasons with the Maple Leafs. Most famously, he passed the puck to Bill Barilko for the 1951 Stanley Cup overtime game winner against Montreal. He spent 2 years as a member of Parliament while playing with the Leafs.
That's amazing.
He ended up replacing King Clancy as coach of the Maple Leafs in 1956. He had a record of 21-34-15 in one season. He then was named the GM of the team the next season. While his playing career was over at the age of 30 after 346 games, where he scored 83 goals and had 102 assists, he continued to play pro hockey on and off for another 15 years at a variety of levels, including the AHL and the Newfoundland Senior League. He retired from playing after the 1968-69 season, but he kept skating into his 80s. He was honored by the Hockey Hall of Fame in 1998 with the Foster Hewitt Memorial Award after a 30-year career as a broadcaster on the CBC and TSN, known for his excitable style of analysis, apparently. He also ran hockey schools for more than 30 years and literally wrote the book on hockey with his 1973 release of Howie Meeker's Hockey Basics. In 2010, he was appointed the Order of Canada and again won Stanley Cups with the Toronto Maple Leafs, multiple Stanley Cups. So rest in peace, Howie Meeker, passing away this week at the age of 97.
What a life.
Yeah.
That's no a kidding. Guy that has just stories to tell and personal experience in a wide variety of backgrounds, and that is amazing to be a member of Parliament while you're an active player.
Crazy.
Yeah, that is something. What a life. And condolences to his family and friends and all that knew and loved him. But 97 and all those memories and accomplishments, that's he made the most of his time here, that's for sure.
On a much lighter note, Toronto Maple Leaf star Austin Matthews announced that he would shave his mustache if he raised $134,000 for Movember. I'm not sure where that figure came from, but that was the number. He has, of course, sported this look since entering the NHL in 2016, but he's putting it on the line for the annual movement that supports men's mental health and suicide prevention, as well as testicular and prostate cancer, basically all men's health issues. He unveiled the news with a video on Movember Canada's Twitter page. He also posted it on Instagram where he said, quote, some of you love it, some of you hate it. I'm only willing to shave it off for a good cause. Your donation will help Movember improve the lives of men. The fate of this incredible mustache is now in your very capable hands, end quote. Apparently raised $4,000 in the first 2 hours of the announcing of the fundraiser, and God knows what it is at this point. But
yeah, the $3,000 of that was from his girlfriend.
Yeah, no kidding. that mustache was hideous. But glad to see it go for a good cause. But I remember when I first saw him with it, I thought it was maybe it was a part of a Halloween costume or some sort of joke, but nope. He apparently liked it and kept it. But I personally thought it was not a good look for him. But that's what Austin Matthews is doing to promote Movember.
I like that reversal of the idea. A lot of times it's the if you shave your mustache, I'll give you $5 for charity kind of thing, and that's the ridiculous, like, just how much of a sadist are you? Just give him the $5. Why do you got to make him, you know, dance to your tune to get the money for charity? So this is more the raise the money for charity, and then I will do something that has nothing to do with the charity. The money is already raised. It's not the for every, like I said, for every lap around the track you do, I give you a dollar. Let's see how bad you want your kid to live. No, just give me the money. If it's that, if you're that much of a philanthropist, just write him a check and don't worry about it. Doug Stanhope has a brilliant bit about that, of making, you know, the requirements to get a charitable donation be based on that. But this is good stuff by Austin Matthews, and he's having some fun with his appearance and the fans as well, and raising money for a good cause.
And by the way, he wears number 34, so I assume that's where the $134,000 goal to raise funds is from, I assume.
Yep.
No news involving the Vancouver Canucks or the Vegas Golden Knights. We skip ahead to the Washington Capitals, where Alexander Ovechkin said in an interview this week he has no intention of playing for any other NHL team than the Washington Capitals. He said on Russian TV, quote, "It's not a question of money. It's a matter of principle. I've played for only two teams, Dynamo Moscow and Washington." Ovechkin's entering his final season of a 13-year, $124 million contract that he signed in 2008. He told RTI, which I guess is a Russian TV network, that he plans to remain with the Capitals for the rest of his career. 35-year-old forward continues to be one of the most dominant goal scorers in history at 48 goals this last season, sharing the Maurice Rocket Richard Trophy with David Pastrnak of the Bruins. Ovechkin scored his 700th NHL goal against the Devils on February 22nd, becoming the eighth player in NHL history to reach that mark. He said about retiring anytime soon that that is not on the agenda. He said, quote, "There are certain goals that I want to achieve after my career, but my career is not yet over. I am still in my prime. I think I will definitely play several more years," end quote. Ovechkin has played all of his 15 NHL seasons, over 1,000 games with the Capitals, who took him number one overall in 2004. He is eighth on the NHL all-time goal-scoring list with 706, 188 behind Wayne Gretzky, who holds the record at 894. Ovechkin has scored at least 50 goals in a season, eight times, one behind the NHL record held by Gretzky and Mike Bossy. Though Ovechkin says he would like to finish his hockey career with Dynamo, where he played before joining the Capitals and prior to the shortened 2012-13 season, he said he's in no hurry to conclude his time in Washington. He said, quote, "It is clear in two, three, four, maybe five, I'll end my career in Washington, and then I want to end on a beautiful note and play my last match for Dynamo Moscow," end quote.
Yeah, that would be the it all sounds good if you're a Washington Capitals fan. The one part that would make me have some anxiety, some pause, is when he says it's not about the money. It's about what he wants. He's already won the Stanley Cup. He's already won all the trophies and accomplishments he can win individually and as a team in the NHL. And if he's happy with the amount of money he has, and why wouldn't he be? My concern would be that he says, I want to go back and finish my career. I want to end my career in Russia. And it's not about the money. It's about what I want to do and where I'm happy. And maybe he only plays another 3 years here in North America before going back to Russia. That's the only concern I would have. But the good news is, much like Teemu Selanne, and nobody apparently outside of Anaheim ever heard this, Teemu Selanne always said, if I'm going to play, it's going to be for the Anaheim Ducks. And every year, because they always signed into a one-year deal or a two-year deal at the most, every year it was, oh, we're hearing Selanne could join Montreal, could go to Toronto, could go to Boston, could go to New... The man has said, he's been very clear, he's not going to leave Anaheim. And Washington is that to Ovechkin. That's his happy place. He's going to play for the Capitals. But we're still going to see reports that after this coming season, if he's not signed, could he be joining Sidney Crosby for a super team in Pittsburgh? Could he be going to Vancouver? No, he's going to play for the Capitals if he plays in the NHL. That's it.
I don't disagree with you, but I can't help but think about the time that Ovechkin said, I am playing in the Olympics no matter what the NHL does.
Yeah.
And then, of course, well, that didn't happen. But
well, we knew when he said that, that it was a bunch of crap, a bunch of hooey. You know, we called him on that. Come on. You're just going to walk out. The team is going to fine you or suspend you. And he walked those comments back. But we'll see. I would hope that the chance, the opportunity to pass Wayne Gretzky as the all-time goal-scoring leader in the NHL would be enough to keep him in the NHL long enough to give that a viable run.
I agree. I definitely agree.
I would hate to see him do a Barry Sanders and be on pace to break the record and then just walk away at 38.
I don't see that happening, but we shall see. And we wrap it up with the Winnipeg Jets, who signed 2020 first-round pick Cole Perfetti to a 3-year interval contract. He was the 10th overall pick in last month's draft. It will carry an average annual value of $1.66 million. The 18-year-old had 37 goals and 111 points in 61 games with the Saginaw Spirit in the OHL last season. Earlier this month, he was one of 47 players named to Hockey Canada's World Junior Selection Camp.
And very nice to get that guy signed for Winnipeg. He is their number one prospect that is not already on the team. Patrick Laine is their top-rated guy under the age of 23. Cole Perfetti is second. He's above Christian Vesalainen. He's above Ville Heinola. He's above Dylan Sandberg. He is the guy that they have their eyes on as a guy with elite skill, and they are very excited to get him. So getting him signed is a good deal, and we'll see what he can do in camp this coming year.
And the Jets also signed forward Marco Dano to a one-year, two-way contract. He'll make $700,000 if he is in the NHL. He was scoreless in three games with the Columbus Blue Jackets last year, 4 goals, 19 points in 46 games in the AHL with the Cleveland Monsters, the AHL affiliate of the Blue Jackets. He's 25 years old. He previously spent parts of 4 seasons in the Jets organization before leaving free agency in 2019. It was originally acquired by the Jets from the Blackhawks in part of the Andrew Ladd trade back in 2016. He was claimed off waivers by the Avalanche before being reclaimed a month later. 141 career NHL games with the Jets, Blue Jackets, Blackhawks, and Avalanche. He has 19 goals and 45 points. He's currently playing over in Slovakia. Couple of random shots before we close out the first period, and I was very taken aback by this news, Doug. Alex Trebek, host of Jeopardy for 36 years, died of cancer on Sunday. He was 80 years old. Just a month ago, we all remember him being part of the NHL draft, making the pick for the Ottawa Senators. He looked and sounded great at the time. NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman said on the passing of Alex Trebek, quote, "Alex was a passionate fan of our game, a true friend of our league. He always said yes when hockey called. We'll miss him and send our condolences to his family and millions of fans and friends," end quote. He was a native of Sudbury, Ontario, grew up a Red Wings fan because of his favorite player, Gordie Howe. He did switch allegiances to the Canadiens after Gordie Howe retired. Several teams and players posted condolences on social media over the passing of Alex Trebek.
It is, I mean, I get what you're saying about him appearing in the draft, but remember that he was not moving as far as walking around. It was pre-recorded. He had makeup on. Pancreatic cancer is still, and that's why the Hockey Fights Cancer and all cancer research is valuable. Pancreatic cancer is the one that you don't come back from. You don't beat. Especially when you get diagnosed at stage 4. My favorite comedian of all time, Bill Hicks, died of pancreatic cancer. He performed live stand-up comedy 6 weeks before he died. And so, you know, and that's a little bit more taxing than recording something. But it just, and that was 30 years ago, unfortunately, 26 years ago. So it's unfortunate that we haven't progressed very far on that, but I knew when, I'm sure Alex did too, when he got the diagnosis that he wasn't going to beat this. It's a matter of managing the symptoms and giving him his best quality of life for as long as possible. But he was as iconic as it gets for a guy that just ran game shows. And I say just, those were a huge form of entertainment throughout the 80s and 90s. Game shows were big. They're not nearly as big as they used to be. And I don't think, just like nobody, the Price is Right is still on the air, but it's not what it was when Bob Barker was hosting it. Jeopardy will continue, but it won't be what it was when Alex Trebek was hosting it. And if and when Pat Sajak and Vanna White leave the Wheel of Fortune, that show won't be the same. So it's iconic people like that that are irreplaceable, and but he will not be forgotten. And how great a moment for Tim Stutzel to have that as part of your as your introduction into the NHL, was having Alex Trebek announce that you were your dream had come true and you were a member of the NHL, the second overall or the third overall pick. Great moment for him, and sad news, obviously, for Trebek and his family. But yeah, pancreatic cancer, man, that is one you do not beat.
And finally, hockey agent Bane Pettinger revealed in an exclusive story with Pierre LeBrun of TSN.
Hockey agent and Batman villain, Bane?
B-A-Y-N-E.
Oh, okay. That's different than the Batman villain. Okay.
Yeah, sorry. Anyway, he has revealed that he is gay. The 33-year-old was manager of hockey operations and men's national teams for Hockey Canada for nearly a decade. He helped Canada to gold medals in the 2013 Under-18, 2014 Winter Olympics, 2015 and 16 World Championships, 2015 World Junior Championships, and the 2016 World Cup. That experience with Hockey Canada also helped Pettinger build close friendships and rapport with many of the biggest Canadian hockey stars, executives, and broadcasters who responded with love and support. Pettinger shared that Edmonton Oilers captain Connor McDavid texted him saying, quote, "Doesn't change a thing, dude, honestly. Just happy you're happy." And Pittsburgh Penguins captain Sidney Crosby texted him saying, quote, "We are happy for you, and I am sure it feels good to get that off your shoulders and to be able to be you," end quote.
Now, how about if the text was, "This changes everything. Consider our contract null and void. I'm looking for a new agent." That would have been the story. We would have led with that a long time ago.
I mean, when I read this, my reaction was, who cares? But I have to remind myself that I live in a very liberal state and city. And
that you're not gay. Like, it's big news to people that are of that lifestyle because they don't have people in pro sports. We still do not have an active player in the NHL, NBA, Major League Baseball, or NFL that is openly gay. Not one. So there's no representation for the LGBTQ community to look at pro sports and say, that is one of us. That is a member of our community. Openly. And we have no coaches that are openly gay in those sports. We have no announcers that are openly gay in any of those sports. So even if it is an agent that you and I have never heard of, it is a big deal to that community to have somebody of their community openly representing them in the professional sports world.
Well, I suppose so, but I'm just saying for me, I would assume the point of doing this is to get people comfortable with the idea of having gay men involved in professional sports. And I'm just telling you, I don't care. It doesn't mean anything to me. I just, great, move on. I don't care. But then again, I'm not everybody. And so for other people, look, this reminds me of, if you've listened to the show, you know, one of my favorite all-time TV shows is called The West Wing. And I remember there was an episode where the characters were having an argument with some higher-ups in the military about, at the time, and this is a show from, you know, I guess, what, the 90s, about gays in the military.
Yep.
And so they're having this debate, and in walks the actor John Amos, who you might remember if you're old. He was the dad in Good Times.
Yeah.
And he was...
Wait, if you're not as old, you might remember him as the villain from Die Hard 2.
Oh, God, I'd forgotten about that. So anyway, he's an admiral in the Navy, and he comes in, and he's like, what's going on, guys? And he's like, you guys talking about gays in the military? And they're like, yes, we are, sir. And he says, how do you feel about it? He's talking to the military guys, and they kind of recite some, you know, what they're supposed to say. He's like, no, I want to know how you feel about it. And the guy says, I don't think we should have gays in the military. Why not? Well, because they would be disruptive to the unit. And he's like, I agree with you. And the other guys look at him like, what? And he says, problem is, it wasn't that long ago that people said having black people in the military were disruptive to the unit. And they were right. He's like, but the unit got over it. And he's like, now I'm the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And he walks out of the room. And that's the point. If you have enough people being uncomfortable, at some point they're no longer uncomfortable. It's just, well, it is what it is.
And yeah. And also the point of any of this is you can't cater to the people that are homophobic or xenophobic or racist or whatever the case is. You can't cater to them because history is not on their side. As he said, and as history has proven, things that were once unacceptable are now normal. There was a time that my marriage would have been illegal, interracial marriage. It's no longer even thought about, and nor should it be. So it's, to me, I personally could not care less what gender you are attracted to. I don't care what you do in your bedroom, in your home, what you read, think, say, watch. I don't care. As long as it is a consensual adult, I don't care. But that's me. So while I may not care, I know other people do. They care very strongly for some reason. I just don't get it. It's no business of ours who somebody else loves. And it's not my place to tell someone who they can or cannot love and spend their life with. So if this guy's gay, I've never even heard of him. I don't care that he's gay. I'm happy for them that they have a member in the pro sports community now that is representing them, but that's where it ends.
Top of the second period here on the Puck Podcast, and we're going to do something a little bit different for the Puck Podcast this week. First of all, it's just me. Doug was unable to join me for what was frankly kind of an audible that we had to throw together for the second period this week. I'm not going to name any names, but I'm going to be honest with you. We had a couple of interviews that I thought we had lined up. The first interview, the person told me that there was a certain subject that he was unwilling to talk about. And that certain subject was a major part of why we wanted to talk to him. So we then turned to our second option. And it was a reporter that we have talked to before who told me last week that he would be available this week. And then he told me he wasn't available this week. So, unfortunately those plans fall through, but, we are going to do something that I think is going to be interesting. I hope you do too. If you've listened to the Puck Podcast for any length of time, you know that I have talked on several different occasions about one of the best hockey documentaries, probably the best hockey documentary out there, which is titled Hockey, A People's History. This was put out several years ago. This is not new. It was released in 2006, but it is a 10 episode series. And these are all available on YouTube if you want to watch them. Matter of fact, I'm going to post links to them on both our Twitter account and our Facebook page. And as a matter of fact, if you want to like go watch it, pause this now, go watch it and then come back and hear me discuss it, then you could do that, or you could just listen to this and then go back and watch it later. But I highly recommend it. It's very well done. It was produced by the CBC many years ago, told the history of the sport of ice hockey. As I'm looking at the Wikipedia page, it says, from a personal perspective, giving voice to various individuals, major and minor, as the sport grows and evolves in Canada. Again, it was a series that ran for 10 hours in total, so there's 10 parts of it. And it was narrated by an actor named Paul Gross, who I am unfamiliar with, but again, looking at his Wikipedia page, apparently his big role, at least as far as maybe U.S. viewers would know, was he was apparently the star of the TV show Due South, where I believe he played a Canadian Mountie. I vaguely remember it, but not too well. I was looking at his body of work and didn't recognize too much. Apparently, he is a very known actor north of the border in Canada there. So anyway, but I have seen this before. I've seen it over different periods of time. It's been a while since I have watched it, but what we're going to do, if you've listened to any of our Puck Podcast movie reviews in the past, it's going to be that kind of a format. What I'll do is I'll watch maybe 15 minutes of it, pause it, come back and talk about what we've seen and give you my thoughts on it. And then we'll wrap it up, but it won't be nearly as funny as some of the awful movie reviews that we have had. But I really think it's worth your time. I highly recommend it. Again, it is called Hockey, A People's History. All of the episodes are available on YouTube, so you can watch them. You don't have to go out and buy this if you're not interested in it. But if you want to buy it and keep it for your collection, you can do that as well. So, okay, here we go with episode number one of Hockey, A People's History. It is entitled A Simple Game. And we will watch some of it and come back and comment in just a moment. All right, so we're back after watching the first 14 minutes and 33 seconds of Hockey, A People's History. And even though I've seen this before, it's still, and I will admit I'm a bit of a history buff. This was already very enjoyable and educational. So it starts off and, you know, they're kind of alluding to the fact that the nation of Canada was growing and evolving, and there is a relationship between the sport of hockey being created and evolving along with the country of Canada. So that is certainly kind of the theme of the first part of episode number one. They talk about, you know, other sports that contributed to how hockey was created. There were sports early on that involved using a ball and a stick. But these sports were not played on ice, and they were not played during the wintertime. Lacrosse, obviously, with the natives in Canada and in North America, obviously contributed as well. They were talking about how there was a game over in Europe that was basically kind of the equivalent of golf on ice. And that apparently had a little bit, like all these different sports had, you know, different branches or roots that eventually came to kind of form the sport of ice hockey. But they also talk about how obviously winter is such a huge part of Canada, and, you know, eventually it would be, you know, the northeast and the northern part of the United States. And as human beings, you're looking for something to do recreationally during the winter. And so, yeah, there's skiing, but skating became a thing. And they talked about the Star Manufacturing Company was the first company to ever create ice skates. And they certainly weren't ice skates as we think of them. Basically, it was a skate blade that would attach and clamp on to the bottom of your shoe. And that was the first ice hockey skates. And there was a guy named James Creighton who went to McGill University in Montreal. And he was a rugby player by trade. But he had the idea of putting these skate blades on, going inside a ice hockey skating rink and having a game where they would use the ball and the stick. Still no puck at this time, but actually this was the first, and I'm sure this is up for debate amongst some, but this is kind of looked at as kind of the birthplace of hockey, the first organized game where they actually had rules implemented. It was indoors, on ice, on skates. And this was kind of the first real hockey game. It was in Montreal, March 3rd, 1875. And the hilarious thing about this is that the game ended because of a fight. Apparently, the people that normally were at the rink to ice skate didn't like the fact that these guys were in there playing basically rugby on ice, and they wanted them off of their ice. And so they tried to kick them off the ice, and of course the rugby players were not really pleased with that. And so the first ever real organized hockey game with rules was halted early because of a fight, which has to, of course, make you chuckle a lot. But that was certainly very interesting. So far, we've heard from Ken Dryden, Hall of Famer, former Montreal Canadian, great goaltender, and Wayne Gretzky have been the two biggest people to kind of comment, other than some historians that probably not many people are familiar with, just talking about the origins of the game. So that was very, very cool. They went into a little bit about how the skates were created and obviously how the hockey sticks were created. But this was, again, March 3rd, 1875, first real kind of organized hockey game in Montreal. And it involved, you know, ice indoors with skates and sticks. The only thing that it didn't have was a puck at this point. We just were playing with a ball. So we'll see going forward, when does the puck come into play, and how does this first ever hockey game back in 1875 eventually evolve into maybe a league or things like that. But that was the first segment of Hockey, A People's History, episode number one. So let's get back to watching a little bit more of it, and we'll come back and comment in just a second. All right, we're back for more of Hockey, A People's History, and it's kind of broken up a little bit into different chapters as far as episode number one. And the second kind of chapter is called The First Family of Hockey. And so the discussion now is kind of talking about, we talked about how hockey got its beginnings with its first official game in 1875. James Creighton was the guy who organized it. And so where does hockey kind of evolve from here? And so they go on to talk about how hockey was really a sport for the wealthy. This was not something that was a game that was played by common folk. Obviously, you had to have the money to buy skates and sticks. You had to have money to be able to rent the ice. And so initially, hockey was kind of a game for the wealthy, which was very interesting. But there was a winter carnival in Montreal. It was the first ever winter carnival in Montreal, and it was a big hit, and it brought people from all over the area into Montreal to be a part of this big winter carnival that they had. And they had hockey there as one of the sports that was going on. And they talked about a newspaper reporter named P.D. Ross, who was a big fan of hockey and loved to write about it. And so that kind of got the word of the sport out to the people. And this was when sports pages were just becoming a thing. Before in newspapers, they didn't have a specific page dedicated to sports, but that was changing. And apparently P.D. Ross was one of the kind of the first sports reporters and liked to talk about hockey, this new game, which he thought was very exciting. It was interesting. They were showing a recreation of the game at this winter carnival, and they would have a guy standing behind. There's no net, by the way. It's just two poles in the ground. And if you got the ball or the puck in between those two poles past the goalie, there was a guy standing back behind it, and he would ring a bell. He would shake and ring a bell. And I guess that was the first origins of the goal judge. And of course, instead of a bell, that we now have a horn and a light that goes off. But I thought that was kind of interesting to see how that kind of evolved. But as far as the first family of hockey, which was this kind of second part of the opening episode was entitled, that would be the Stanley family. And yes, of course, that would have to be it, right? But Frederick Stanley official title was General Governor of Canada. And he was from the UK, and he was over here, obviously, basically the governor of Canada, so to speak. And he was at the Winter Carnival, and he saw hockey, and he immediately fell in love with it. He thought it was amazing. And so did his kids. And so his kids started to play hockey. They would create teams in which it was, I guess, ironic or not that James Creighton, the guy who organized the first game, ended up being on the team of the Stanley kids. And they would go around to different cities and have hockey games. And that's how the game started to grow a little bit. And the kids ended up talking their father, Frederick Stanley, the Governor General of Canada, into investing, I can't remember what it was, like $50 or something, into a cup that would be given to the winner. I think it was called the Challenge Cup. And anybody could challenge for the cup, and it would never stay in one specific place. But again, these are the first steps of the Stanley Cup as we know it, and how it is awarded to different, obviously, teams that win it, and how it's passed around and things like that. So again, here's a sport that I think I kind of know about. But I've seen this before, but it was a good reminder of exactly where did the Stanley Cup come from. And I had forgotten, and now I've been reminded. But Frederick Stanley, the Governor General of Canada, who was from the UK, but he was over here, and he was the one who created the Stanley Cup. And I think we had known about this before, but the Stanley Cup actually was created in England, I think London, and eventually was obviously brought over to Canada, which wasn't an independent nation at this time. Of course, it was a part of the Commonwealth of the United Kingdom. So that was interesting. The first family of hockey, the Stanley family. And now we will wrap up the final segment of episode one of Hockey, a People's History. All right, so we're back watching episode one of Hockey, a People's History, the CBC documentary, which is really great about teaching the history of the game of hockey. For some of you, this stuff will be all new, and maybe for some of you, you knew about this, but it's just kind of re-remembering some of the things about it. But that's kind of where I am. But it's still, I find this stuff to be really fascinating. So, okay, now we're seeing the evolution of, like we mentioned earlier, like the evolution of the country of Canada and how hockey kind of goes hand in hand with it. So at this point in time in history, the railroad has been completed across Canada, which connects the East with the West, and also the telegram has now become a thing in Canada. So you've got people and eventually hockey players being able to be connected to travel against each other and play against each other. And then you've got the telegram, which is, you know, relaying news back and forth to different cities. And so there was a big game involving Montreal against Winnipeg, Winnipeg coming into Montreal to play for the Challenge Cup, the Stanley Cup. And Winnipeg ends up winning the game. What was interesting about this game was, and I didn't mention this earlier, but when they kind of came up with the rules of hockey early on, I think they said it was 9-on-9, and there were no substitutions at that time. Also, there were no boards. So even though there was a designated ice playing surface, the ball could go out of play like it does now, but there were no boards there. There were just people standing around the outside of the rink. I still haven't gotten any specifics as to when the transition was made from the ball to the puck. But one thing we did see in this first big match between Montreal and Winnipeg was that the goaltender for Winnipeg was wearing cricket pads over his legs. And at the time, goalies were not allowed to drop down to the ice at all. You had to be a stand-up goalie, which is how we saw goaltenders play, obviously, early on in the sport of hockey. But through necessity and to prevent injury, this goaltender for Winnipeg wore these cricket pads over his legs. And obviously, it gave him a huge advantage in helping to be able to deflect and stop the puck. So that's where the origins of the goalie pads came into play. It was also very interesting that this first match between Winnipeg and Montreal, there was a telegraph on site, and there was a person relaying what was going on in the game back to the people in Winnipeg, and I assume other parts as well. And so here you have the first hockey broadcast coming from this game as well. So again, Winnipeg was able to win it. They win the Stanley Cup, and it was reported by the sports writers that the Stanley Cup itself could hold 2 gallons of beer. And so here you had the first time, well, maybe not the first time, but the first time on record that they were, the team was, were celebrating by drinking out of the Stanley Cup. So that's where that evolved as well. They also talked a little bit about how French Canadian players were starting to get involved in hockey. And they had a little interview with Jean Béliveau talking about the origins of that as well. So that's where we had, you know, we had the first official game, and now that's evolved into cities actually playing against each other. And now we've got the final part here of Hockey of People's History, episode number one. All right, I'm back for the final segment of episode one of Hockey, a People's History. And a very amusing story about, you know, when the Stanley Cup was first created, it was called the Challenge Cup. And basically any team or could challenge whoever was the champion to a match for the Stanley Cup. It was not like they were organized leagues and you had to win a certain number of games to advance. You could just somehow put a team together and I guess lobby the champions to challenge them, and then they could accept or decline your challenge. But really interesting that during the Klondike Gold Rush, there was a guy who made a lot of money in the gold rush. I think it was Joseph Boyle. And he got into hockey, and he created this amazing indoor arena. This was in Dawson City, which is up in the Yukon Territories. This is north of British Columbia. So this is really out in the wilderness, especially in these days. But he built this amazing arena, which had traditional nets. It had boards, and it even had ads on the boards. So we're seeing our first ever advertising and making money, and how the arenas now look these days. This is around the turn of the century. So he put together this team called the Dawson City Nuggets, and of course, Nuggets for the Golden Nuggets that were there. And the team at the time that was the champions was called the Ottawa Silver Seven. And if you look at the very top bowl portion of the Stanley Cup, you see Ottawa on there multiple times because they were the big team to beat back in the beginning years of the Stanley Cup. So somehow he convinces the Ottawa Silver Seven to accept the challenge from the Dawson City Nuggets. And I won't spill the beans on it, but the trek for the team from Dawson City to make it all the way to Ottawa is unbelievable. I'll just tell you this. It starts with them traveling 300 miles on dog sled just to get to real transportation, which was a ferry and then the railroad. So their trek to Ottawa was, I don't know, they didn't say how long it took. But that is amazing. But anyway, they end up getting creamed by the Ottawa Silver Seven. But that was when it was decided that the Challenge Cup really, they didn't think this was a good idea, that it needed to be changed. So you couldn't just have a team throw down a challenge and then have the champion accept it or not. So we're going to see kind of the transformation into maybe more organized as far as the leagues are that would compete for the Stanley Cup. We still don't have the NHL in place yet at this point. But they closed out episode one of Hockey of People's History by talking about how hockey was becoming so popular that it was now apparent that this was not just sporting activity. This was turning into a business, that owners of these teams were starting to make money. More and more people were showing up to be spectators. Newspapers were making money because they were reporting on these matches that people wanted to read about. And there was also gambling going on these matches. So suddenly this is becoming a business, and now the players are understanding, hold on, wait a second. Everyone's making money but us. And so now they are understandably wanting to get a cut of this money as well. And so clearly we're seeing that this recreational sport is now turning into a business, turning into a profession. And so that's where episode one of Hockey of People's History signs off. I really enjoyed watching this again. If you have watched it, I'd love to get your take on it and some of the things you found interesting. You can always send us an email, feedback@puckpodcast.com. We're going to do episodes 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 at various points throughout the offseason, and then who knows, if this will probably stretch into the next offseason. But I wanted to start off by doing episode one. And Doug, I'm sure, will join us for other episodes going forward. But I love this series. I'm like I said, I am a history buff. I'm obviously a huge hockey fan. So this is kind of a match made in heaven for people like me. If you haven't seen this, I really encourage you to watch this. It's really well done. I really enjoy it. So can't wait to do episode number two. At some point down the line, I'm sure we will get to episode two, certainly before next season starts in the NHL, maybe a couple of the episodes at some point, when we don't have an interview lined up or some other special feature. But anyway, that was, again, episode one of the 10-part series, put on by the CBC. I think, again, it was released back in 2008. It's called Hockey of People's History. Again, you can find this on YouTube. And I will post it on our Twitter account and our Facebook page if you want to watch episode one and see all the things that I couldn't talk about or maybe didn't describe well enough. So anyway, that was that. Hope you enjoyed it. And we'll have more of these coming up down the road. Top of the third and final period here on the Puck Podcast. And Doug, we have made Puck Podcast history.
Oh, yes.
For the first time in the 14 years of doing the Puck Podcast, we have no emails this week.
That is correct.
Nothing.
I mean, there was a lot going on in the world this past week. I will say that.
All right.
But, yeah, there wasn't a lot of hockey news, and there was a lot of other stories going on to distract people. If they want to email us for next weekend, even just to say hello, what is that email address?
It's feedback, FEEDBACK, at puckpodcast.com.
And our Twitter handle is at puckpodcast, and our Facebook page, facebook.com/puckpodcast. I got a question for you going forward, and this is just an extended off-ice report. What are you doing in September of 2023?
Hopefully I'm breathing oxygen.
Well, I should hope so as well. But, are you interested in traveling to Indiana with me to see our Fresno State Bulldogs play the Purdue Boilermakers?
Sure. Why not?
Big Ten football. I don't think we've ever seen them at a Big Ten stadium, correct?
No, we've seen them. You've seen them at an SEC stadium. I have yet to do that.
Yep. Pac-12, obviously.
Yeah, for sure.
We were going to do a Big 12 this year, but that got canceled.
Yeah. Yeah, we didn't go to Wisconsin when they had a series against the Badgers. That would have been a great one to go to.
Yeah, we didn't go to Nebraska. We should have.
Let's see. I think we played Ohio State a couple of times and got the living bejesus beaten out of us. Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Why not? We'll head on over to West Lafayette. I've never been to the great state of Indiana. That's where my grandparents were originally from.
Is that
my
right?
My mom's parents, yeah.
West Lafayette, is that the name? Is that where they
yes,
play?
That's correct. That's the city that they're in.
Where is that in regards to the state? Do you know?
Yes. No, I have no idea. No idea where it is in the state.
I did not know that's where they were. I really hadn't put too much thought into where they might be. But no, I'm looking forward to it. That'll be the one down the road, obviously. You and I, the reason I bring it up is we like to travel to see our team play at various schools. It's fun to see the country, to support our team on the road, and various different, you know, you get to see different parts of the world and or the country and experience different game day situations. And Fresno State is one of those schools that we play teams like that to make some money. They know they're going to win, and we know we're going to lose, but we go just for the experience. That said, we play in 2 years, Ed. We are at the UConn Huskies. Do you have any interest in going to Connecticut?
No, I don't think so.
That's a game we might win.
Yeah, could. That's a bizarre trip because I don't know what we get out of that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That one's weird.
But no, it's. I saw they announced today that we got our schedule or our opponents for 2023, and we are going to Purdue and to Arizona State.
Definitely go to Arizona State.
I thought Purdue sounds, I mean, like I said, an opportunity to see us at a Big Ten team is a chance I'm not going to pass up. And that'll be a fun trip in a few years, assuming all goes well and we are able to make the trip. But yeah, that'll be just, it's one of those like you and I both want to go see the Kings and the Ducks travel or see them play on the road. Where have you seen the Kings play road games other than the pond? Which is the easy trip to make?
Obviously, San Jose, Vegas. Let's see. Oh, Chicago.
Okay.
I think that might be it.
Actually. You have not. You did not see them in Arizona. You have not seen them in Arizona.
No, I have not seen them play in Arizona yet, which is surprising.
Yep. Chicago was part of your trip back there to see the Steelers Bears. Is that right?
No, no. It was Bears Chargers for my wife, and then Blackhawks and Kings for me. And that was one of the worst games I've ever seen the Kings play. It was. They didn't show up at all for that one. It was, I think it was 5-0 was the final. And it wasn't that close. so I've seen games in Vancouver. I've seen games in Pittsburgh. But not Kings games.
Right.
So, yeah, that's it.
No, it'd be fun to see. Like, you and I both want to go see Fresno State play at every Mountain West school. Except Boise State.
I saw a couple of Lightning games when I was in Tampa Bay for the Super Bowl, but the Kings were not involved in those either.
Yeah. So. But no, it would be fun to travel. And we know a friend of the show, Mike DeKalb, has traveled to see a game in all 31 NHL cities. And but he's not following certain teams. You know, it's another thing to just say, I'm going to see the Ducks play in all 32 NHL arenas. That would be a goal for me to set over the rest of my life, really, to follow them on a road trip once a year and just go back and be like, okay, now I'm going to see them play Florida and Tampa in one trip. And then next year, maybe I go up and see them play the Islanders, the Rangers, and the Devils on a trip and get those games out of the way. It would be a fun life goal to set and get to see the entire NHL and cheer on your favorite team in the process.
All right. Well, that will do it for this week's show. Thanks to our sponsors, Navy Federal Credit Union. Again, real quick, if you want to send us an email, feedback@puckpodcast.com. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/puckpodcast, and on Twitter @puckpodcast. So that'll do it.
Well done with the show. People's history for the NHL or the hockey, people's history. So well done on that. And we will see. When we get to part two, hopefully I will be able to partake.
All right. Sounds good. For Doug Stolhan, I'm Eddie Garcia. Thanks for joining us for another edition of the Puck Podcast, and we will talk to you next week.
While no one knows what tomorrow may bring, Bridgestone is working toward a more positive outlook. With innovations like developing a tire using 75% recycled and renewable materials. It's just one of the many ways Bridgestone is making a difference today for generations to come. Because that's what really matters. Bridgestone, solutions for your journey. Visit whatreallymatters.com to learn more.